Hey, sit down. There's more.
Hey, listeners, this is Sit Down, There's More by Talk Like a Mother podcast. Today's bonus episode is no reservation style, but not series focused. So sit tight and listen up.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Sit Down, There's More. All the ladies are here to continue our Harry Potter journey. We appreciate the messages we've got from some people following along and enjoying us. We're getting notes from my brother.
Being entertained, at least
being entertained. Laugh at me. Laugh at the situation. It's all good. We love it.
JK, you're welcome for your influx of people watching Harry Potter movies.
Basically, we bought dozens of books from this.
Dozens. People pulling out their old books they've already.
I mean, I'll tell you, I bought 6 audiobooks and all I bought paperbooks.
And I bought one for her. So,
yeah.
All right. So,
I moved from Netflix to Peacock. That's about all I got.
Okay. So, this is Harry Potter and the Half Blood Prince. The 6th movie came out in 2009. I believe the book came out in 2005. Again, directed by David Yates. And a quick synopsis. This movie follows Harry's 6th year at Hogwarts. He delves deeper into the past of Lord Voldemort. Dumbledore enlists Harry's help to unravel Voldemort's secrets and discovering crucial information hidden within old memories. Harry navigates the challenges of adolescence and relationships, and he learns about Horcruxes, which must be destroyed to defeat Lord Voldemort. The film culminates in tragic events that change the course of the wizarding world and set the stage for the final showdown between Harry and Lord Voldemort. So this is my 2nd favorite movie. This is a lot of people's who are fans of the book. This is a lot of people's favorite book. So
favorite book.
Yes.
That makes sense.
It's probably my 2nd favorite book. This book definitely has my favorite chapter. I think like one of the best written chapters of the whole series. A lot of people love the book. Because of that, a lot of this is the movie that's probably the most different from the book. In that, like, a lot of major things do not happen in the movie that happen in the book. And it pisses a lot of Harry Potter fans off, apparently. But I actually really like this movie. I just think it's really well done. I feel like the pacing's really well done. And I feel like all the performances for the first time are, like, solidly good. So
dialed in, yeah. You can definitely see that everybody's growing, not just older, but, like, better at their craft.
Yes. And like even the actors who are like amazing actors, because there's amazing actors in these movies that play the adults. I feel like just the edit and the director like just gave them more time to breathe. And I think especially in the extended edition, which are the ones we're watching, it just like moves so much better. You don't feel like you're running a marathon through the whole movie. I don't know. And you guys give me your opinions because I'm biased, obviously, from the book. But I just think it's a lot of really funny that a lot of Harry Potter fans really dislike this. And I'm like, I think it's really well done for what it is, even though it doesn't follow the book perfectly.
This one, it's a little darker, a little more action, but there's like some underlying humor, which I really like too. At the same time, it's just like those dimensions I like when there's a lot of dimensions.
I thought it's so funny because it's like super heavy on the like Death Eater dark vibe of the like all the stuff fighting and whatever, but it's also like juxtaposed with all of this like more than puppy love that's happening. It's like such a both story, you know.
When I first read the book, I don't know what it was, but they talk about like they're constantly talking about making out, snogging and stuff, and it just like kind of annoyed me in the book when I first read it. I was like, get to the like, because this is like the world is changing all this stuff. And I'm like, I don't care if people are making out. But now like I see like the sweetness in it and their kids and all that crap. But
it's funny the different words they use too, you know.
Like, yeah. That's how I learned the word snogging. I was like, what?
Snogging.
So this movie opens differently from the book. This is where the books, I think I mentioned last time, start getting kind of political. So this book actually opens with the Muggle Minister of Magic and like just his background, like, and the fact that he knows the wizarding world exists because they tell him, and just how it all works. And it's kind of interesting. But the movie starts with the Death Eaters attacking everywhere. And okay, this is me and Kimmy had a conversation the other day, which I'm not going to get fully into because she was so confused between the Death Eaters and the Dementors. Yeah. And I realized it's because the way the Death Eaters travel, which is strictly a movie thing, because it's basically representing them apparating as which when a wizard like appears somewhere else. But for in the movies to show that with the dark wizards, they do like this black smoky thing. And that's just to show that. But I was like, oh, that's where that mix-up's coming from. I totally get it. Because it's like, why are these
My first lines of these 5 pages of the whole thing say, okay. So first Dementors fly into the shop, then they come out as people. I thought Dementors and Death Eaters were different things.
And now I get that because I just never realized in my head that that would be confusing.
Well,
because
there's no Dementors in this movie, is there?
No. At the very beginning, first, like, you see them and you see Greyback and they're grabbing Ollivander, which I actually did not really realize that that's what was happening. I mean, I knew that he got taken. Ollivander was the wand guy who sold.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't realize that that happened, that they showed this in this movie until I did this rewatch. And maybe it was cut in on the extended edition, but it happened so fast. But, and then they knocked down that
it.
Bridge.
And I watched it twice.
Kimmy, remember, did you hear or grasp that? That remember last night we were reading the Wikipedia about it? Like the synopsis, and we were like, who the Sam Hell is Oleander? That's the wand fella.
That's the wand fellow. He makes the wand.
And they
That's
lit his not the little way. Shop on fire with their big swirl of darkness.
And later on, they're walking through there, and Hermione says, oh no. And they go into there.
I should remember that. Yeah. I didn't see him get grabbed. I don't know.
I haven't noticed all these years because it just happened so back. You notice more the next part where they go and they knock over the Millennium Bridge and all that stuff. So like,
and they're like in the boardroom and everybody's like looking out the window. It's very it's very like superhero movie to me, like that. Like,
yes. So that doesn't really necessarily all of that doesn't, I mean, Ollivander does get taken and stuff at some point, but they kind of just talk about it. But it's just showing that the Death Eaters are kind of taking over. They're not getting any crap. Who knows what? Like, Muggles are seeing this stuff. That's still not necessarily how it is in the books. It's a little more like they're still trying to take over underneath everything, but it represents that. So it makes sense.
I will tell you that in this number 6, I read the book first, then watched the movie, which I think kind of really makes things, my view on both, different versus the opposite. But the day that I watched this goddamn movie, the bridge in Baltimore fell. And I had watched all day the Key Bridge fall in Baltimore, and then god dang, turn on the movie and they swoop under the bridge in London. And I was like, ugh, like, it's just too close. It's too close for comfort.
So then it cuts to Harry, and Harry's like, getting his flirt on. Showing.
Ooh, in the subway.
In the subway station, girl.
Get it. The natural curl girl.
Yeah, she's a cutie. And then he's like, and she's like, meet me after work. And then, but then Dumbledore appears and takes Harry and Dumbledore. I really like just like the comments that Dumbledore makes throughout this movie about like young love and stuff and like. Hint, hint.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It has like this underlying, like,
he's definitely throwing a vibe. Like, he's like, even about the black hand, he's like, oh yeah, that looks disgusting, but the tail is so good, you'll just have to wait in here. Which, by the way, like, I don't even know if we ever heard about it completely.
Yeah, that you don't really
in the movie.
In 7, do you? No, I don't know. Anyway, so they go off. And I think it's supposed to represent that, like, Harry and Dumbledore are coming, like, a little bit more equals. Like, Harry's growing up, so Dumbledore can kind of, like, and they're just getting closer. And you're getting a lot more Dumbledore in this movie than you have before. So they go to find Slughorn. So they go to this house. It's all, like, destroyed. And then they figure out that Slughorn has faked all this because he's trying to hide from Dumbledore. But also he's trying to hide from the Death Eaters. They're trying to recruit him.
I like when they clean the house at the end of that. I was like, I need that in my life.
Yeah. Like, I love how all of the magic effect or like special effects of the movies are getting so much more like magical and like dialed in. But also, like, I was so excited when I was reading that book to see what Slughorn was going to look like, because he becomes a chair in that mess of a house. And then they do the cleanup and whatever. But like, and in the midst of there's this gross moment when Dumble tastes the blood. I'm sorry. When Dumble tastes the blood, I was so disgusted. I was like, oh, for the love. Anyways, I was so stoked about Slughorn's outfit. And then he's just like, goes into striped pajamas from being a chair. I was like, okay, that was
amazing. And I like when he's like, I need a raise.
Yeah.
So that actor is Jim Broadbent, and I love him. He doesn't look like how they describe him in the book. He's like bigger, and I think he has a mustache or something, but he's such a good actor. He plays it so well. But anyway, his character's a little like, he's a Slytherin. He used to be the head of Slytherin when he was there. So he's a little like conniving, clever, a little icky, but like overall he's like an okay guy. He's just kind of out for himself. You know, he like, Dumbledore talks about how he likes to collect kids.
Ew, that is so serial murderer.
Well, he doesn't like actually collect them, but he like,
I know,
you know, brings them into a circle. Ew. So when they become successful, he can kind of like mooch off of them in a way.
Yeah. Like, he's like, I'll have season tickets to this, please.
Yes.
Yeah. He takes credit kind of.
Yeah. And then,
oh my God, then we go to back to Big Molly's house.
Ooh. Yes. We're at the Burrow. Harry gets to spend a little more time with the family. I love that scene where he's about to show up and they're like, is Harry here? It's just like little things like that you didn't feel like you had time for in the other movies, you know?
Yeah.
So Ron, Hermione's there for some reason. Hermione's never home. And then the rest of the Weasley family, and then him and Jenny, you start seeing like their awkwardness, and there's like an awkward hug between them. Hermione and Ron, you get more of the plant of like them
vibing. You
know, yeah.
And Jenny and Harry a little bit.
Yeah.
Too.
That's, yeah. And
my notes say, back with Molly, that hug with Ginny the Ginge. Also, that solo stove floating in embers seems like a fairly risky risk adverse, considering the Weasley's house is 15 stories of stacked sticks. Watch it, witches and wizards. They had that floating ember of like Draco burning.
Which is just like a cute scene. Like they're back together, and Harry's obviously like in a different mood than he was in the last movie. Like, because, you know, Voldemort's not in his head. Still kind of always in his head, but not in his head. And then so we go to Snape's house, Spinner's End. Snape has a pretty, I like kind of like Snape's house.
I didn't know. I thought that was Hogwarts. I did not know that that was his house.
Nope, that's his home. And Narcissa Malfoy, which is Draco's mom, Lucius's wife, and Bellatrix there, her sister is Bellatrix. They go.
Oh, wait a second.
Yeah, Did the same thing.
Isn't Bella a Black somehow? Isn't she related to the Black somehow?
Mm-hmm. Their maiden name is Black. They're all married, though, so they have different last names, obviously.
So Draco's mother,
Draco's mom is a Black.
I missed that.
Bellatrix. So Draco's mom, Narcissia, Bellatrix, and then Tonks's mom are all sisters.
Tonks. The pink hair Tonks.
The girl who can, like, change her face and stuff. In 5, she goes and
She showed up to do the pickup and stuff, and she shows up again later. She marries a werewolf.
I did not realize that was Draco's mom. That scene makes so much more sense now.
Yeah. So basically, Draco, what they say in the scene is Draco's been given a task by Lord Voldemort. Mm-hmm. They don't really say what it is at this point, but she's asking Snape to basically protect him, and that if Draco doesn't do it, Snape will, so that Lord Voldemort doesn't kill Draco. And the reason she's doing all this is because, I don't know if they fully ever explain this, but Lucius has been arrested. He's in jail. He's in Azkaban right now because of what happened. And he got caught at the end of 5 with, you know, fighting all the kids and the ministry and stuff. So they do the unbreakable vow, and they explain it later in the movie. But if you break the unbreakable vow, you just die. So it's like Snape has to do whatever they're doing. We find out at the end of the movie what that is. But it's like a big deal that he did this. In the book, you're like, what? Like, because this whole time we're trying to figure out, is Snape good? Is Snape bad? Where, you know, like,
the whole time since the first goddamn minute of the first movie.
And I love the part where like Bella's messing stuff. He's like, put it down, Bella. We mustn't touch what isn't ours. I love Alan Rickman.
They had such like a power struggle vibe between like Snape versus everybody.
Yeah. He's such a good actor. And I feel like this is, I mean, he's great actor in most of the movies, but this is like where Snape really gets to like thrive. And just like his like pull back of everything is so good. Anyway, that's just film nerd stuff. Just a big theme of this scene is like, it's a mother's love again, like in kind of a messed up way, but Narcissa is doing this to protect her son. Like, she loves her son so much that she's basically defying Lord Voldemort because she should not be doing this, but she's doing it to protect her son, which comes into play later and is very important that she loves her son.
Well, that's okay, interesting, because I didn't know that was her.
Yeah, now you know.
I like wrote to Jamie, can I just read it back in these notes, Jamie, about this? The first words I typed to her are effing Snape. And she goes, you watched 6 immediately. And then I was like, I'm reading. And then she wanted to read with me. And then I go, page 35, gross. She has a bleach and tone too. 7 lines from the top. Narcissa gives a little scream of despair and clutches her long blonde hair. Yuck. And then I'm like, wait, who's Tonk? And then I got the whole family tree,
which they don't talk about really in the movies. Yeah,
I mentioned, look at this.
I didn't make that.
To our listeners, this is like a 17 generation left to right family tree of Black family history that Jamie just throws at me one time when I was asking a good question.
I'm going to show you.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's great. And then creature. Okay, sorry. Keep going. Let's keep going.
So then we're at Weasley's Wizard Wheezes, which are the Weasley twins. After they left Hogwarts, they started their own shop. What they don't show in the movies is that Harry gave them the money to start their shop. Like the whole time they're planning on starting a shop and they're like coming up with like different things and all that. The winnings Harry wins in 4, he gives to them because he doesn't want that money. He feels like sick about that money because Cedric died, blah, blah, blah. They don't talk about that all in the movie, but I just think it's like an interesting fun fact. And if you go to Harry Potter World in Orlando, you can see the shop. You can go in the shop and Honeydukes and all the places.
I know business is booming for the twins. It's like a blue sky day at a moon store on the path of totality during an eclipse, if you know what I mean. Like it was booming in there.
It was booming. And everything else is closed. A lot of people that own shops and stuff have been murdered or they're gone. Or so like the fact that they're still functioning, and in the book, their parents are a little more wary about it. Like,
yeah.
And Molly's it's like really a big, it's a big visual thing where everything is dark and then it's this big bright shop. Like, you know, like you can kind of see down the aisle, which is pretty like cool.
It is.
It looks like FAO Schwartz vibe feels when you're a kid.
But like in a dark alley of blackness.
Yeah.
And then, so the trio, they go out and explore, and then they see Draco and his mom. A lot more happens in this where like they see Draco and their mom at the robe shop in the book. She's like pulling up his robes to fix it. And Draco like freaks out. And so that's Harry's first clue that Draco might be a Death Eater. All the Death Eaters have a tattoo on their arm. That's the dark mark. So,
yeah.
So they go to Bergen & Bortz. You can go there too. My favorite shop to go to in Harry Potter World. It's air conditioned, that area, just so you know.
That's even better.
Yes. But in there, Draco's like doing something. That's in the book, it happens differently. It's just Draco by himself. It's not all those people, but whatever. He's looking at a cabinet. In the book, he also looks at the necklace that we see later in the movie.
And that creepy guy just shuts the shade.
Yeah. And that is Greyback, who is he is like.
Is he the one who put up all the signs? Is that the same guy?
No, that's Filch. That guy works at Hogwarts. This guy, he is a werewolf, but he somehow has managed to like stay or maintain his werewolf powers all the time. Like, so he enjoys biting people and turning people. And he's actually who turned Lupin in the books when Lupin was a child. So he's like a really effed up individual. And they play him up a lot more, I feel like, a little bit in the movie than in the book. But that's who he is. And he pops up throughout the movie and then in the next movie. Anything about that?
I thought he was that other guy. So there's that.
Just greasy guy.
I'm like, he's just like everywhere.
One of them. I wrote, then Harry Potter and Ron sees that prick in his mom. They're either up to no good or they're going for a high lift in tone. Props to the stylist for upping their game this time. Because you're right about those bleaching tones. They're getting better. They're getting better.
Yeah.
Anyhow, then Draco and Narcissus end up in a shop. And, TikTok is in a whole ass twist about this. So there are scenes. It must be that there are scenes in this extended version of more of him in the shop, whereas in the shorty version, he's not like shown there, like in the cabinet. Oh. I don't know.
I don't remember. It's been a long time since, because whenever I watch, I just end up watching the extended version. So I can't remember what's there's something you can kind of tell because they have to like cut to black to get out of them or like because it's not in the original edit. But this movie, I feel like there wasn't a lot of that. Like it fit in pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay. Then they get on the train. A lot more happens on the train, but I'm not going to go to that. And Harry hides in Draco's cabin. He uses like that darkness power. In the book, he just uses his cloak. In this, he uses both. And then Draco notices that he hides up there. And because Harry's trying to listen in and figure out what's going on with Draco. So like the whole book and movie, Harry's like, Draco's a Death Eater. He's doing this, he's doing this. And no one's really like believing him. He was right.
Which is seriously like the Potter, like everybody may as well call it the Potter paranoia, where he's like making something of nothing, but every single time he's right. Yeah. I write. Then it happens to Harry Potter in this movie. He senses something.
It's like, I feel like that happens in real life. Like I know what happened to someone we know. And I remember it happened to someone in our family. And it's like me and Neil's sister were like, no. And everyone's like, oh, you just don't like her. Like you just, like they didn't see it. And then finally they're like, oh, We're like, yeah, we were right, you know.
Yeah. That happens to Harry in every dang situation.
Yeah. But sometimes he's been wrong. Like, he was wrong last time. And that's why Hermione's a little bit, because he was wrong about trusting that Sirius was actually at the ministry and Sirius wasn't there.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
You know, like, so I kind of get it. But then Draco breaks Harry's nose and says, that's for my father. So.
What a savage.
But it's just because Harry already doesn't like him. So they just think he almost like wants it to be true, kind of.
Well, and he's always been an a-hole, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And then Luna finds him in the movie. In the book, it's Tonks, because in the book, they explain more that people are always watching Harry.
Yeah.
But in the movie, Luna finds him because she can see her weird thing with her glasses or the gnat. What are they?
Oh, that thing is called a Raxpert. Mine says, Luna sees some stuff and stumbles upon my boy Harry. They walk, and then the friend line. Ramos says Luna is on the spectrum. I see it. Gosh, all the way she swirls her arms around the Raxperts out of the room. And then I was like, also, I can't wait to see the glasses. Her whole vibe on this one, because I was reading the book first.
What year did this definitely movie come out?
Play up her idiosyncrasies. What's that?
Sorry, what year did this movie come out?
2009.
I bet the name Luna was popular. I'm going to Google that.
So Luna also, I don't know if I said this before, that's my daughter's middle name. And my daughter,
I was going to say, it probably surged from the movie.
But her outfit she's wearing too in this scene. So when we went one time when Amelie was a baby, I put her in like a mini little Luna of good outfit. I'll send you guys a picture later, or I'll put it on the stories too. And then, Luna takes him up to the school. She fixes his nose, and on the way up, that's when she said, it's like being with a friend. And Harry's like, we are friends. And it's just so...
Oh,
and you see there's extra security at the school, and they're
like a beach on Jamaica. It is uncomfortable.
I love when they're walking down the hall and Hermione's like, excuse me, I have to go vomit.
Oh, when they come out. So, okay, so then they have the feast, and we actually hear Dumbledore talk a little more this time. We find out that the whole time, especially when you're reading a book, you assume Slughorn's coming in as the defense against the Dark Arts teacher. This is to find out that Snape is becoming... moving to defense against art, and Slughorn's a potion teacher. And that was a big deal when we were all reading the books, because at that point we all kind of knew or felt like the position was cursed and that you only had it for 1 year if you had it.
Except that Hagrid had that position. He didn't get shit canned after.
No, Hagrid wasn't defense against the Dark Arts teacher. He was care of the
magic. Oh, that's right. He was like the outside teacher with the...
We find out about that. Dumbledore tells everyone like, hey... Voldemort's out, like he just reiterates all that stuff. And then so Harry and McGonagall, like you get that funny scene where Harry's like hanging out because he didn't think he could take potions because he didn't score high enough on his owls. But McGonagall's like, go to potions, and then she's like, take Ron with you or whatever. And then I just think that's funny moment.
Before you know it, the kids are all acting like upperclassmen in the hallway. Ron and Harry Potter go for extra classes as Maggie Smith suggested. The classes with the new teacher who's also a chair. Harry Potter and Ron don't have the book, so they each take one out of the cupboard, and lo and behold, it has hints and secret codes for the whole mission he doesn't understand yet. So Harry.
Basically. And then we see the potions in this, and the Felix Felicis gets planted here.
Liquid Luck is first.
Felix
Felicis. Yeah.
They have to make a draft of death potion, and Harry does it really well because he's kind of cheating out of his book, but... Yeah. That's how we get to know the Half-Blood Prince. Obviously, in the book, it's such a bigger thing. Like, Harry's, like, constantly in the book. He's, like, obsessed with it. And they talk about
Hermione's pissed.
And Hermione's pissed. Jenny's pissed, too.
Oh, she's so salty.
Yeah.
Well, and Jenny's pissed, too, because remember in book two, Jenny got possessed by a book that was, like, that people were getting obsessed with. So they're kind of like, dude, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, it's fine. And I just love that
the whole chosen book. One. So calm down.
I just love the chosen things that he gives. But I love that whole scene. I love how like Hermione's hair gets bigger and bigger because she's just dressing out, trying to make this potion.
Oh my God.
Just in general, this movie just breathes so much more that there's more fun stuff. Like,
yeah.
And then so Harry, in the book, they talk more that Harry's like taking lessons from Dumbledore, but it's more like Harry's meeting up with Dumbledore to do all these to see all these memories. And then Dumbledore again is like kind of nosy. He's like, what's going on with you and Hermione? And Harry's like, nothing.
Inappropriate.
I'm calling HR at Hogwarts. Oh, right after that's the Tom Riddle flashy.
Yeah, so this is our first memory in the movie. I mean, in the book, there's so many more memories that I wish were in here that just explain so much of where all the Horcrux is from. You see, like, Voldemort, his mom's, like, family, all this stuff that's cut. And that's part of what pisses people off. But we get to see little Voldy. What is Kimmy called him?
Baby Voldemort. Baby V.
Every time you call him baby, I picture that chicken wing. Sorry, you can cut that, but that's what I was picturing the whole time. Gross.
When we get to that, you could be like, this is what I thought was baby.
Ew.
And
you're saying youngster Tom Riddle when he still had a nose.
Yeah, that's what I said earlier. Baby V when he still had the nose.
Yeah, Kim.
And I told the ladies, fun fact about that kid who plays Voldemort. He is actually the actor, Ralph Fiennes, who plays Voldemort. That's actually his nephew. And I think that kid's performance is really good. Like, it's like all the acting in this one I feel is so good. And I don't know if it's like the direction or just.
Yeah, you can like see that he's a sociopath. Like,
yeah, he does. Yeah. And it's like, for being a kid playing an 11-year-old, I'm like, this is pretty good.
And you know, the other thing that struck me a lot about, I think it really was that first Riddle Flash. It's like such a parallel to Harry not understanding, like, he can talk snake. What's that snake speak called?
Parseltongue.
It's like this sort of like, I don't know what's happening. I don't want to go to your school for insane people. He's like, no, we're witches and wizards, mofo. You're going to learn some spells. He's like, I can do some shit. He's like, well, calm down, you know? And then as he's fixing to leave, he's like, pulls that Slughorn turnaround, like, oh, and I speak snake.
Yeah, and I can talk to snakes. Yeah, I just love
how. And then young Dumble was like, hold up, you're coming with me, sir.
Biggest mistake he ever made.
He was going to go anyway. Dumbledore didn't really have it. I mean, I don't know what he would have done. Gone back and be like, I think this kid's evil. Don't let him in. Yeah. Like, I don't know what else to do.
He needs a dungeon.
And it's more, and Dumbledore's like, it's better to like keep an eye on him. And Dumbledore even says, like, I never thought he'd become like the darkest wizard of all time, you know?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, because Harry gets a little forward in this with like Dumble like blurring the lines of like dude bro and teacher. It's like Harry gets pretty forward, you know. Frickin' Dumble is still talking in riddles the whole time. And I'm not talking about Tom Riddle. I'm talking about like he just doesn't say anything outright and Harry's like over it. He's like yells at him about it a couple times.
Say it.
Yeah.
And then we see the Room of Requirement for the first time this movie, and Draco's doing something in there with the cabinet. And then we see cut to Harry Potter is now the Quidditch captain, which is exciting in the book. And they're doing tryouts, and Hermione kind of helps Ron a little bit.
This is the one where they think they've given him the liquid luck, or that's later?
That's later. These are the tryouts. That's the actual game.
Oh, you're right. Okay, now I see that. Or get that. Remember that.
Hermione and Jenny, again, they show really giving Harry a hard time about the book. They go to Hogsmeade. Harry Potter kind of kisses up to Slughorn because Dumbledore had told him to. And then, so like, it's like a funny thing. Like, so they're walking back to Hogwarts and Hermione's like, ooh, because like, they're like drinking. These kids are like drinking, which is like, I don't know if it's just like a cultural difference or like.
I know.
Like they're drinking.
And then they get that mead too later. I'm like, cool, your tits, you're underage.
I think they're drinking. And I don't think.
Well, I'll tell you who looks like she was three sheets to the wind was that Katie Bell situation. I'll tell you what. I realized it wasn't, but I was like, you need to cool it.
Yes. This is the part where they're walking back to school and then Katie Bell and her friend Leanne are fighting. And then something happens to Katie Bell. And then like, I think this scene is badass. Like she lived it up. Like,
yeah,
she's been cursed by this necklace I don't know if they fully explain it, but she goes in the bathroom at the Three Broomsticks or wherever they are. She comes out with this package and she's like, I got to get to Hogwarts. I got to give this to Dumbledore. Her friend's like, what the hell? They fight over it. It opens and then she's cursed. I just think that's a really cool scene. And then they have to go, the kids all end up in McGonagall's office and she's like, why is it when something happens, it's always you three? And they're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Snape comes to look at it and it was a cursed necklace and you find that she was supposed to take it to Dumbledore. So someone's like trying to get Dumbledore and we figure out later who that is. Anything on that? Questions?
Slughorn school, no. No teacher. No master wizard.
Thank you, Miss Ramos, Professor Ramos.
We start seeing a little bit of jealousy because they keep talking about Jenny dating Dean and Harry's like, and they have the Slughorn dinner and Jenny comes in crying and Harry's kind of like, oh, what's going on? And then McLaggen's like making like licky lips at Hermione. It's a little much, that scene.
Oh my God, I'm going to have to rewatch.
Yeah, that's a funny scene.
I got super pissed about the Quidditch, that dude when he grabs the fly. Okay, so some dude grabs a fly and then asks Ron about H. So he runs off and snogs Lavender Brown. Please note, when you mix light purple with brown, you get maroon. Ew. That's nowhere near as good as wavy, smarty Hermione vibe. I was so pissed about Lavender Brown. I was so mad.
But I think that was so mad. It's so good. She's over the top.
Who's the guy that, what's the fella's name that Hermione is with when she's like not with Ron?
McLagan.
McLagan. Okay.
Who she doesn't even really like. She finds him creepy, but she invites him to the party because she wants to make Ron jealous. The party that happens later.
Oh yeah, jelly. Yep.
Or just like to piss him off, I guess. So then it's the first time Harry brings up Voldemort to Slughorn to kind of like test the waters. And then the Quidditch game happens and Harry tricks Ron into believing that he's had the liquid luck.
I love that.
And then Harry and Hermione have a moment after Lavender kisses Ron in front of everyone and it breaks Hermione's little heart.
Oh my God, that's when Hermione sends the three little birds at him. Boo, 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 boo.
But it's really sweet between Hermione and Harry because she's like telling, she's talking to Jenny.
Is that when she's on the steps crying? Is that one?
Yeah.
There's so many little.
But Hermione says to Harry, she's like, you're my best friend. And then she asks about Jenny and like, you know, that's the first time Harry like admits.
Oh, because she's like, that's when Hermione's like, I see how you look at her. How does it feel when she's snogging another man?
Yep. And then there's the party and Harry takes Luna, which is really sweet.
Oh my God, I love that part.
And then Draco
comes. I have to say, the way that we are rallying around Luna as a troop is just fab in this movie. You get a little bit of Ginny loving on her. You get some Hermione. You got some like devoted Harry vibe. I just love that because those little pricks used to steal her shoes and all her thing last year.
Yeah, other kids did, yeah. Booties.
Yeah. I was so ticked off by this point after that Quidditch game, Jane, that I write, P.S. None of this matters because Snake took the vow with that jerkette. I was so mad. Like, why are we even watching this movie?
I know. But you didn't really know. Like, it's just hard. And then Draco sneaks off and he's talking to Snape and he's like, I gotta do it, or whatever. And Harry sees all that. And Harry's like, something's happening and I'm the only one freaking seeing it.
He's like, yeah. The map.
Yeah.
And then Harry goes to the Burrow for Christmas and like Lupin's like, no, we trust Dumbledore, and Dumbledore has a snake.
Isn't this when Dumbledore starts to like disappear too and his hand keeps getting blacker? Or is that like in the book mostly?
I think this is when he was traveling.
Yeah, he's traveling at this point in the movie. But
that's
in the
very suspicious.
Well, in the book, he's just in and out a lot, and we find out because he's starting to look for the Horcruxes.
Yeah.
But they don't really explain that, but he's also giving Harry these private lessons, so they like Harry kind of knows when Dumbledore's not there.
Okay, what is a squib, too? That's what I have a note. What's a squib?
So this is like an opportunity I missed last time to explain about Mrs. Fig. So Mrs. Fig in the books, like, babysits Harry and stuff. She lives in his neighborhood, and we really mostly care about her in book one, but she's around. And it's a huge reveal that she knows Harry's a wizard and everything in five. And I didn't really talk about that. But you find out that she's a squib. Filch, the caretaker guy that does the hammering that
kills him,
he's also a squib. So a squib is like the opposite of a muggle-born. So they are born into wizarding families and have like wizarding bloods, but they don't have any powers.
Oh my gosh. Didn't that happen to that girl in that Disney movie where we don't talk about...
Oh.
No.
Yeah.
She doesn't get any powers. What's her name? Matilda?
Maribel.
She's a squib. Maribel. She's a squib.
But she kind of does have a power at the end of that movie. It's like to keep the family together. But whatever.
Oh. Okay, whatever.
But yes, that's a really good example. So yeah, that's what a squib is.
I feel like a squib. When I got a Celie Flanagan and she came all extra, I felt very squib. Hashtag squib. I'm just immortal.
So, and then Arthur and Harry have a conversation. Arthur kind of explains what the cabinet does that Draco's been looking at. Still, people don't get it. They don't really explain it in the book at that point, but whatever. Okay, and then Ginny ties Harry Potter's shoe and then stands up and says, Merry Christmas, Harry. And Isaac's like, that represents... And I'm like, you are ruining my childhood innocence.
He's like... And then he starts untying his shoes every day. What? Isaac Ramos, get it. He is just...
She's like, what is going on? And it is a little way. She's like, Merry Christmas, Harry. Like,
oh my God, I can't wait to rewatch. That's so funny.
And then they're all at the house and the Death Eaters attack the house, the burrow. This scene pisses off a lot of book readers. This does not happen in the book at all. I think they did it to kind of replace stuff that happens at the end of the movie that they completely cut out. But I love the scene. I love the way it's shot. Like that style of them running through the bushes. That's my thing. That's my, you watch my student films, you guys, you're going to see that crap. I think it plays a great purpose. Like it raises the stakes. It shows what's going on. It shows how like real the Death Eaters are about doing stuff.
Wait, I'm like confused. What are you talking about?
When the Death Eaters show up at the burrow and Harry and Jenny run after them, and then Tonks and Lupin and Arthur, and they're all battling, and then they burn down the house.
Oh yeah, I thought that happened earlier for some reason.
No, it happens at Christmas. Merry Christmas.
It is just so savage.
Yeah, it's so savage. That doesn't happen at all in the books. So a lot of people hate it, but I kind of love that scene, and I think it's really well done. And it just like you feel it. You feel like you're there.
Explains why their goddamn vagabond pack every day. They're in a different home. Like Kimmy said the other time, I go, I don't even know where they live. And Kim's like, that's because they move every friggin' movie.
They don't move every movie. Yeah, in the movies they do.
No, they don't move, but they're in different places in every movie. Yeah, like, they remember that other house where they were like having the meetings and stuff.
They do move into that house for a while, but that's for the purpose of like running the order. And they have to give up that house after Sirius dies because they don't know if it's safe anymore.
Oh, yeah, because Harry's taking it, but they have to test it with that house elf.
Yeah, but also they just don't know if other people can go to it because Black was the secret keeper for it. Sirius was the secret keeper for it. So they don't know what that means. They don't know if they could be attacked there or whatnot. You find out later in 7, they do use that house and it's fine, but they didn't want to risk it. So, and I also think that scene like shows like how much like all these people are sacrificing to stay on the good side. Like they literally just burnt down the burrow. And then there's the next memory and it's unfinished. And so Harry needs to get the rest from Slughorn. That's the task he's given by Dumbledore. And Slughorn will not when Harry approaches him and gets a little pissy when he mentions it.
Yeah, he's all
feisty. Like he didn't really, you know, work it in there.
I know, he's not very smooth. He's like, oh, by the way, I need to read your memories. Can you reboot?
Also, I'm going to reset the exact same thing that happened with you and Voldemort that you apparently are very triggered by. And just see that.
Harry's such a youngster.
Hermione makes fun of Harry later on that I didn't really realize. I don't know if that's an extra scene they put in for like the way he's approaching it. So then Harry goes to his dorm at Simport and Ron had eaten some chocolates that were gifted to Harry by that girl who wanted to like woo Harry. So they're love potion chocolates and Ron's like love potion poisoned. Or he's
this love is the scene is just so funny. Like, and he's like up in the bed with him and he's like, do you even know this girl? He's like, no, but I love her.
Introduce me to her. Can you introduce me? And it's really funny in the book because when they get to Slughorn, so they go to Slughorn, who's like, Harry's like, help me like remedy this. And they're the whole time they're like, okay, she's coming. You just have to drink this. Like it's just really cute.
They're just like faking him out the whole time. Like, come on, we're at Santa's workshop.
Because it's like aggressive when like he can't get to it. It's pretty funny.
Yeah,
I write.
And then
I wrote in my notes goes back to Slumlord for help with love potion.
Mine says love potion and then the mead. Ron says Hermione. But wait, did the mead happen at the same time?
So Ron, he gives him like a potion to fix to counteract that other potion, and then they're gonna like cheers with a drink that Slughorn opens that was supposed to be a gift,
you know, like when children have alcohol again.
Yes, they're having a little shot ski and Ron is the first to drink and it's poison and Ron nearly dies, and Harry thinks quickly that this is one, it's called a bazord, you can give it to someone and for most potions it will, or poisons, it will counter it. So luckily Harry thinks of that because Slughorn just freezes, and so Ron ends up in the hospital, and again they're all like, who was that?
But I love when he sits up and goes, these girls are gonna kill me.
They're all in the hospital wing, and Lavender comes to see him, and Ron will only say Hermione.
You asked for me? No, bitch. I
love it. I'm like, bye. No, bye.
Bye, Lavender.
She's so, that girl, I mean, she's unhinged. She's not that unhinged in the book, but that girl plays it so good. Like, she's like, calm down, sweetie. Like, stabbing the table later. Anyway, and then Dumbledore says
that's my sister in real life.
And then Dumbledore's like, oh, to be in love and feel to be young and to feel loves King Ding. It's so funny, like how Dumbledore's all like, ooh.
He just thinks,
and then Ron doesn't remember any of that. So then he's like, how did I break up with her? And at the next whatever day, Lavender's like stabbing the table with her spoon, like staring at them. Like, she's going to murder you.
My notes say, love potion of the mead. Ron says, Hermione, now purple is gone. And so is that muscle man after H. Good Lord, Draco, that spell. Or that Draco spell.
Yep. So Harry sees Draco in the Great Hall where they're all hanging out. And Draco runs off and Harry goes after him. And they like battle out in the bathroom. And Draco, when Harry walks in, Draco's crying.
And then he has a panic attack. Goes with our last recorded episode.
Yeah.
So Draco's, you know, you don't feel like Draco's stuck in a really crappy position. His parents were Death Eaters. He basically had to become a Death Eater because his dad got arrested. And now he's been tasked with like murdering.
He's like dying under the pressure.
And so you do feel a little bad for Draco, even though you don't really want to in this scene in the movie. I don't know necessarily in the book. Oh, no. But he's like, he doesn't want to do this, but he doesn't feel like he has a choice. It's either do this pretty much, I think, in his mind, or be murdered, or his family be killed. So then they battle out, and then this is where Harry uses one of the spells that he found in the Half-Blood Prince's book, and it's called Sectum Sempra, and it like cuts Draco up, like it's gonna kill him. And so this is where Harry figures out, like, oh, maybe the Half-Blood Prince isn't as innocent as I thought.
Maybe he's a Scandal McDandal and I am up to no good and I didn't even know about it.
So Miss Weasley over there helps Harry hide the book in the Room of Requirement.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's Big Jenny. Jenny the Ginge.
There's a little bit of
their little kiss.
Gosh, the kiss.
In the book, they end up dating. They go hang out under this tree and stuff a lot. There's a lot of snogging going on in this book. So the fact that this is like a little peck, it's like, okay, good. Okay, so then Harry decides like he's got to get the memory, and the way he's going to do it is he's going to drink the lucky potion.
I know what's coming next. Cheers, Jen. So
we're
going
to get to one of my favorite scenes ever in all the movies. But anyway, he takes it, and then he tells Hermione, he's like, I'm going to go see Hagrid after he drinks the potion. And she's like, no, you're supposed to go see Slughorn. And he goes and does it because he's just trusting the potion. He's acting a little drunky. I guess that's just how he's portraying it.
Like manic. He's kind of manic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just doesn't care. No F. He's on that good anxiety medication.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he goes out and then he runs into Slughorn, who's being sneaky, stealing stuff from the herbology teacher.
Is a little snipe as well. He just carries around shit to steal samples all the time.
Well, crap. Anyway, so he's still
not that he would know anything about that.
And then so they go down to see Hagrid, and Slughorn follows Harry in the movie because everyone's supposed to be watching Harry because people are trying to kidnap him or get him to Voldemort. And so he's like, I better follow
him. Hashtag chosen one.
So then they get down and they realize that Aragog, the giant spider, has died, and Hagrid's very sad. And so they end up having a little funeral for him. In the book, Slughorn like sneaks the fang stuff. In the movie, he asks Hagrid, which is nice, but
then Harry gulps the potion, heads to Hagrid's, and that huge effing spider. Ew! Then Sluggy takes the blood, that random savage.
It's worth a lot of money. What is he going to do? He's on a teacher's salary.
Yeah.
Even with his raise. So, okay. This is like one of my favorite scenes of the movie. It's not in the book. I mean, it is in a book that they have a conversation and Harry does get the memory from him in this moment, but they go in the house. I'm not going to cry. They go in Hagrid's house and they're drinking because they're like, not celebrating. They're mourning the loss with Hagrid, and they all get drunk. Well, especially them. Harry's not really drinking as much as them on purpose in the book. He just knows not to because of the potion. And he's also a child. Anyway.
And he's also a child. They were lit up, though. They were like Vegas dance party.
And Hagrid's half giant. Think about how he has to drink to pass out.
Yeah.
But he tells Harry this story because he like mentions his parents. And Slughorn really loved Lily, Harry's mom. She was a student of his. I mean, they both were, but he tells like this beautiful story and it like breaks your heart every time, how like he goes to his office and there's just like a bowl there and there's just a lily in it, and the lily magically turns into like a fish. Oh, they're talking about pets, and then he mentions the fish, whatever. And he tells Harry, he's like, and that Lily, he's like, your mom, Lily, gave that to me. And he's like, and I shove it. And he's like, and one day I woke up and it was gone. And it was because Lily had died. And Harry's like, I don't know. I just think it's a really beautiful way to like capture that relationship and to capture like how good of a person Harry's mom was.
And also a little bit like validate who Slughorn is, because like if wonderful Lily was able to trust this asshat, Harry could too in this moment. And like, yeah. Then he goes in for the kill, doesn't he? And he's like, I need the intel, man.
So Slughorn starts talking to Harry and he's like, I know what you want. And he's like, I can't do it. He's like, if this comes out that I knew this, it will, you know, like he's worried and he probably feels really guilty that he gave Riddle all this information anyway. Harry goes, you know why my mom died? Or he goes, you know why I have this scar and I survived? It's because my mom died for me. She was brave. She stood in the way. And he says, be brave, professor. Be brave like my mother. Anyway.
You have the tears.
Anyway, I just
thought you were crying all of a sudden, Rachel. I'm like, Jamie's crying in one bucket corner.
I know. I don't like his friend to cry alone, but
like
I
literally that moment for me in this movie makes up for so much. Like I just hate that people don't like this movie. Like those scenes are so good. And
don't you know about the Lily fish?
Shut the hell up. Just kidding.
Yeah.
So anyway, Harry gets the memory, runs off to Dumbledore, and they learn about from this memory, they learn that Riddle at the time asked Slughorn about Horcruxes and that he wanted to see if he could split. Basically, you split your soul into these objects to keep you alive into seven. And Slughorn's like, holy crap. But holy seven, mackerel. Just so you guys, seven in Harry Potter world is like the most magical number.
They should call China. I think it's eight.
And that's why Voldemort wants to do it in seven, because he thinks it will like amplify or whatever. I don't know.
Horcrux. T. Riddle explains them. So you cannot die. He splits into seven that greedy.
Or that brilliant. That was brilliant.
He's smart, but
evil. And then I was so pissed. I'm like, so number one, journal, two, ring, three, that necklace. Yeah, Dumbledore says he sees the boy from the cupboard, but he trusts him enough to bring him to the cave of green slimy doom. Green flaming doom.
Oh, I love that line too. That comes later about the cupboard.
That is not the official line.
Yeah. All I have the line probably written down later. And Dumbledore says, once again, Harry, I must ask too much of you. And basically, you're going to help me start finding these Horcruxes.
At least he's calling a spade in this freaking movie. And while he's next to maybe the... Because he's at least saying, like, hey, Harry, we're using you to save magic and humanity. Let's roll.
You have to destroy these Horcruxes. And Harry already has destroyed one without knowing it, which was the journal. So, checky. And then between all this, there's a scene where, like, Harry goes to see his friends and Dumbledore's talking to Snape one last time, kind of. And Snape says to Dumbledore, he's like, I can't do this. He's like, you asked too much of me. And Dumbledore's like, shut the F up. You have to do it.
Yeah. I've lived 374 years. You're going to do this goddamn thing.
And then Harry and Dumbledore talk before leaving to the cave. And that's when Dumbledore says, I forgot how much.
Oh my God, she's getting misty again. Here it comes.
I am not. He says, I forgot how much you've grown. At times, I still see the small boy from the cupboard. And
here it comes.
It's really sweet. He tells Harry they're going to go on this mission. He tells Harry, like, you have to do what I say. You can't.
If I say leave, you leave. It does not matter. I mean, he was pissed. Or he was like stern.
Yes. He's like, you got it. Okay. Yeah. So then this is.
Business Dumble.
So this is the chapter I was talking about. My favorite chapter from all the books. It's called The Cave. So I'll go through it and then I'll tell you guys why I love it. Do we have any questions about it before I go all Jamie on this?
Do you need a glass of wine or a Kleenex? I'm asking for a friend.
I have water.
Okay.
Okay. So Harry and Dumbledore go to the cave. They have to like get in. Dumbledore has to like cut himself to get into the cave.
Your blood is worth more than mine, Harry.
Yes. And so Voldemort has hidden one of the Horcruxes in here, and you have to go through all this to get to it. So they have to like go through this nasty lake in this boat. They get to this basin, which is filled with potion, and it requires a sacrifice. Dumbledore says, I'm going to do it because you're too precious. Also, you have to save the effing world. You don't have a choice. And Dumbledore drinks the potion and it starts taking a toll on him, and he starts behaving almost like childlike, begging Harry to stop. It's even more kind of in the book. He's like, please, please, please don't make me. And he told Harry, no matter what, make sure I drink this potion.
No matter if I beg and plead, because he begs and pleads.
Yes, and he does. And so Harry gets him to do it, and he kind of has to drink. And it's like almost like, it's almost like he's talking to a child now.
Yeah.
And Dumbledore does it. And I don't know if you guys ever read the book. I just feel like this chapter is written so well. And so my personal interpretation of this chapter, which we can cut this if it's too much, but J.K. Rowling, when she was, I believe, in her early 20s, her mom ended up dying of MS, and her mom like got hit by MS and she declined really quickly. And so this always makes me think of like people in my life who like you know, like parent figures. This hasn't happened to either my parents yet, but like grandparents and stuff, who you see as like such strong figures.
Yeah.
And then they get sick, and it's like you take that mantle because you become the caretaker and the adult.
Yeah.
And this is like that, you know, in these books when like it's like a rite of passage, which the mentee takes the mentor spot. But the way she does it, it's like in a way that like Dumbledore becomes like childlike, and he's so sick and so weak, and Harry has to like take over.
He's so reliant on Harry, on no one else. There is no magic that can help him strengthen. There is like nothing besides this bond and commitment to one another, right?
And he's sacrificing himself so Harry doesn't have to do this in a way. And it just really makes me think of like that moment where like a child has to take care of a parent.
Yeah.
I don't know if JK's ever said that's like where she got the idea for this chapter or how it was written, but it just like feels that way for me. And I think that's why it's the best written chapter, because she's representing that, like when your parent is dying and you have to like become the adult when for someone that used to be such a strong figure in your life.
This whole book is such a power shift in that very same, like it's leading to that moment so much, because like he has just been this kid under the wing until this power shift now of like, I don't know. I think pretty much since it became like a beach in Jamaica where everybody's got a machine gun, so to speak, like everybody's got these like gates around it. Everybody's securing it. Everybody's protecting him. Like Dumbledore gets real fresh about it. Like he's like, hey, listen, this is not good for you. Hey, the soul.
And then Harry's trying to get Dumbledore water. I don't understand why Harry can't just do that water spell into Dumbledore's mouth, but whatever. That's all these things I always say.
It doesn't work. In the book, he explains that, doesn't he?
He does.
Jimmy, you're muted.
Sorry, I was going to say, there's no reception in the cave for magic.
There's no reception.
Yeah. Well, I can't connect to Wi-Fi.
But I will say Voldy put some pretty good spells in there that I guess probably prevented it. So Harry goes to the lake to try to get water, and that triggers the Inferi, who are basically zombies.
Yes, they are.
And they all look like Gollum, kind of. From
Lord I don't know who that is, but it is yuck.
The guy from My Precious from Lord of the Rings. Anyway, so they start attacking, and Harry's like, gonna die. And then Dumbledore takes all that he has in him and like, does his Dumbledore magic and fires them, rings of fire.
Yeah, because they can't have any light because they're like a dead vampire vibe. And then the guy's like, parts the sea with the fire to get the little boat that just can chug along. And that's chained to the bottom of the ocean. Okay. Or the grotto, at least.
The grotto. So then they go back. Dumbledore gets them out of there with the apparition. And
I don't even know who Gandalf is, Jamie. I write, the boat, the poisonous drink, the dead things grabbing my HP, suspense, okay? The flames, full f-ing Gandalf. I don't even know
Gandalf. It does remind you of Gandalf. I will say that. Some people think the same guy who played Gandalf should have played Dumbledore, but anyway, I don't think so. So they end up back at the Astronomy Tower. In the book, it's a little different. They go to Hogsmeade first, and they get to Hogsmeade, and Harry's supposed to get Snape to help Dumbledore. And then Madame Roz Mirza comes out. She's like, there's a dark murk on the castle. Dumbledore's like, we got to get to the castle.
I texted you that. I couldn't figure that out because I only read the book one time. I was like, who's Rose Murda? Why do I care?
She runs the Three Broomsticks.
Yeah.
And you find out later that she's been under control of the Death Eaters. So she's the one that, I believe she's the one that gave him the necklace. And she's the one.
That's true. That's true in the book.
Gave the poison.
And she even transfers the mead like a little shit bag.
So she tells them to go to Hogwarts. But it's because she's under the, she's not bad, but they're controlling her. They make her bad.
Yes. They did the same thing to Moody. Sort of. you know, you turn a goodie.
Well, Moody was a whole different person, a person pretending to be him.
With I'm sorry. You know what I mean?
I'm just yeah, I get it. I know.
It's no good.
A tricky trickster.
Yep. A huge the suspense of the Draco and the Dumble on the tower. I can hardly wait. Go on yeah, that.
So in the book, this is what pisses a lot of people off the most. In the book, there's a whole battle going on at Hogwarts.
Yeah.
All the, like, Death Eaters are there because they get in through the cabinet. You find out that Draco's that's yep. why he's been messing with that cabinet because it transfers people. And
an apple and a dead bird.
Yeah. All the orders there fighting them. And like some of the students are fighting them, but others are like in there because it's happening late, whatever. But they're, you know, they're kids also. But there's a whole battle going on that is not in the movie. It makes people so mad. I think that's why you see that scene earlier that I was talking about to kind of represent like how bad
the discord is. Yeah.
But so what happens here is like, basically, they get to the astronomy tower and Draco gets there. Dumbledore and Harry are there and Dumbledore's like, go get Snape. And then Harry starts to go, but then they hear something and he's like, go hide. This is also what pisses, this makes me mad.
That did not happen.
In the book, Dumbledore does tell Harry to do that and he tells him to hide. And then Dumbledore freezes Harry. So Harry yes. cannot move and help. In the movie, yes. that doesn't help. And so that doesn't happen. So it makes no sense why Harry doesn't help.
Well, I think it makes sense to me because I feel like he thinks that Snape's going to help.
That's true. He trusts
Snape. So I think he's hiding, thinking Snape is going to go and then like save Dumbledore.
And Dumbledore's like, do not move. So I kind of get it, but it just, I don't know. It makes
and
sense.
And he can't see
it
what's happening. So
yeah.
I agree that Kim's like point is that it still is Koch or whatever, but like, it is so much better in the book, although I don't know how you could even do that. Just, like, do what it is. Not
be able to move. So Draco comes up and he disarms Dumbledore. He gets his wand. And then the other Death Eaters come in, and that's when Dumbledore finds out how they got into the castle and all stuff. And then Bellatrix is really pushing Draco to murder Dumbledore, and Draco's mm-hmm. hesitating. So Snape steps in, and that's where he walks back to Harry, and he does like I'm gonna like save the day. But then he steps in, and then the last thing Dumbledore says is Severus, please. And then Snape kills Dumbledore with the Avada Kedavra.
Oh, then I mean those savage. Try to light Hagrid's house on fire. I'm sorry. Like, I don't mean to jump, but like, how are you trying to kill all the good?
Yeah. So in the book, it's like Harry runs after them and Snape, and they're running through this battle and people are on the ground. And oh, also in the book, Harry doesn't drink all the Felix Felicis when he gets the memory. He saves some and he gives it to Ron and Hermione to keep them safe during this battle. And I think Jenny, but I can't, it's been a while. So Harry, but anyway, he chases after Snape and then he tries to use the septum symptom spell on Snape. And Snape's like, bitch, do not use my own spell.
I am the Half-Blood Prince, you bitch. Yeah.
Yes. And then Harry's like, what? And Harry's just pissed because he's like, he trusted you. You killed him. It's just like really sad. And Harry's really sad. And then
every frontal figure he's ever had has just died.
Prick too, either like a genuine love who is like ripped from him, or they're a asshole, like a two-time and traitor. Hey, did Harry steal the necklace in the book and in the movie from the cold dead hand of Dumble?
But I don't know if in the book how it happens, if he's like it's in his pocket or something, but he takes it, yeah, because he has to, he's supposed to destroy it.
Yeah, okay.
Hogwarts mourns the loss of Dumbledore. They do this thing where they all hold, like, this is also in the book, there's a whole funeral. All these wizards for all over come to the funeral. The freaking mermaids come out, the centaurs come out. It's like a huge thing. But in the movie, they hold up their wands. The kind of sweet thing about this, so a lot of the actors have died, and every time one dies since they've opened the Harry Potter like wizarding world, people who are there, they'll hold up their wands to like honor them at a certain time. And it's kind of like kind of love it. But like this actor who plays Dumbledore has died, and people went and did that like specifically for him. And
who else died?
So Narcissia, who, Draco's mom, the actress, has died. Alan Rickman, who plays Snape, has died. Uncle Vernon has died. Both the Dumbledores have died.
Aunt Bitch is still kicking in her friggin' tweed.
Robbie Coltrane, who plays Hagrid, died, and I cried that day. John Hurt, who's Ollivander, has died. Anyway, a lot of people have died.
That's a lot.
And yeah. when they do, the people in Florida hold up their wands like that. Are you kidding? That's so cute.
And, yeah, and at the California one. So there's no funeral in the movie, which sucks.
Yeah, I feel like it kind of like ended abruptly and you were like, whoa.
And you do get that like sad moment where like Hogwarts is just quiet and silent. Like in the book, like all these kids get picked up immediately because they're like, what the hell? Like obviously there was like a Death Eater battle there and now Dumbledore's dead.
In all the other movies, oh my God, I'm about to rage. In all the other movies, you come to the end of a crisis. Okay, you come to the end of a crisis. You come to the end. In this one, you're left knowing that there's more souls split. You're left knowing that we only have the goddamn journal, the fake freaking RAB, the goddamn ring. Like, this is unanswered situations that you have to leave for four years. No wonder you guys were like a fiend at the goddamn theater.
But the people who read the books know what happened, so it's kind of
like... That's what I said to my son. Well, not even about this, really about seven. I was like, I'd have been bullshit if I like
bullshit. Saw
seven.
Exactly.
He goes, yeah, but the people who have already read the books. And I was like, oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Well, and also like, I will say these last four movies, really the last three though, really do start to like lead to an ending. So in a way it's kind of nice that it's setting you up so much for the next movie, because not all the movies are setting up for the next movie, but I get it, there's not like a clear defining end, but that's also how the book was. So when you read the book and yeah. Harry's like, I'm not coming back next year, you're like,
I'll tell you, have to wait. I closed that book and but I it open makes sense. The next one like a like right
in
now
seven it makes sense because it was actually one book.
Yeah. So there's the end scene with Harry and Hermione talking and Ron's just chilling behind them. And Harry's like, this isn't even the real Horcrux. So like in the book, it's a little more like Harry's freaking devastated. Dumbledore basically died for no reason. Although we find out later, Dumbledore probably would have died anyway. He was already dying and that's why his hand was black. But we'll talk about that later. There's a note from a person and it says, you know, I found your Horcrux, RAB. He thinks he got Voldemort. And so he put a fakie there to trick him, thinking Voldemort would go back one day and find it. This was a huge deal between books. Books were written about who RAB could be. Like everyone was like, who's RAB? Who's RAB? So it was like a huge deal between the books. With that note,
I went weird on that 17 generation black family situation. I went real weird at the end of this book. I was like, okay, I gotta go back to that family tree and I gotta get down to this. Hermione's all, sometimes you can be real thick. You need us, Harry.
Yeah, that's like a sweet part because Harry's like, I'm not coming back. He's like, I'll let you guys know where I am. She's like, obviously we're going with you. And like, and then the last kind of line is Harry just looking out because he's saying goodbye to Hogwarts basically, which has been his home the last 6 years, and he goes, I never realized how beautiful this place was. And then bow, bow, bow. Any questions?
I have lots of questions about the next two though.
I know Kimmy's already told me.
I know. Can I just tell you, Jamie Ramos, what happened to you and I at the end of this movie is that you see, like, I was like throwing out some hypotheses after and around Dumbledore's death, and you were like, hold on, dumbass, how fast are you listening to this? Why don't you slow it down? And then we stopped talking for a little bit because I had to feed myself the next goddamn book.
Oh, I thought you stopped talking because you were still like, I'm gonna race through this.
Yeah, I was continuing to race. I was reading like a mofo.
But this next movie coming up, Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows Part One, is one of my favorite movies of all time. And I've feel like a lot of people, I think maybe that's more because like my film background, and so it's like shot beautifully and all that stuff, but I really do like the performances and it feels a lot like the book to me. So
yeah, because you really sit with the characters for a good amount of time, I feel like.
And the whole situation's like they build to something rather than like it being such a fast ass thing.
Yeah, and then eight is just the opposite where it's just like,
and you're in the world, like you know, you see, you know, things are just different. And then it's more.
Plus you're done discovering people. You're sort of in like the tied up phase of things instead of like.
Any listeners out there to know it's okay if you're still on number three. We are here for
yes.
you.
Jen's going to catch up. She's going to catch up.
Jane, you need to change your expectation. I'm not saying I received a postcard from Jen from Hogwarts, but I'm saying it's not going to happen.
Every time I'm like, Jen, just watch the movie. Just skip the other ones and just watch this one.
She's like, I know.
And it's just an interesting thing where like very rare it is that you have a series of movies where it's always like the first few are always so much better, in my opinion.
This does build opposite,
but
doesn't
this one, it's like each one is better than the last for me.
I agree. Like, yes. I totally agree.
I like looking at the characters and how they age. Yeah, that's the stuff I look at. Like, oh, look
yeah. I have to say, even though I just said that each movie gets better, I like 3 better than 4.
I like 7 better than 8. So
there's some weird shit coming up here. I can hardly wait.
But anyway, that's the end of Dumbledore, which is really sad. And a lot of people beat up Dumbledore's character because, you know, he's like allowing kids to die at a school and a lot of dangerous stuff. But I do really love his character. And I think it's like a really good lesson of like not to idealize people, that everyone's human, but they're just doing the best they can. And oh, yeah. We'll learn about after this Dumbledore's backstory. So there's a whole backstory to Dumbledore that you learn a lot about in book 7. It's a little in the movies, but not as much as Sophie. But
in chapter 10, Dumble says this: "Naturally, I do. But as I have already proven to you, I make mistakes like the next man. In fact, being, forgive me, cleverer than most men, my mistakes tend to be correspondingly huger," which I thought is like, that's the most Rachel'd up sentence ever. Those are not real words. And then also like, he's just straight up owning the fact that like, hey, I might be the best goddamn wizard in the world with a total ZZ Top beard, but I make mistakes, and I have with you, and I'm very sorry about it. He's also in this like sassafras mode that I just cannot get enough of.
It's hard because it's like, on some levels, he kind of used Harry, you know?
He totally did, yeah. But he told him at least.
A lot of Isaac, well, I mean, we could have Isaac on and just do an episode about how he hates. Yeah. And then
I'm going to have Isaac and Mitchie on with Steph. That's what I want.
When you eventually meet Dumbledore's brother, he's like, kid, he just used it. But in a way, Dumbledore kind of had to use Harry. So it's just, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Everybody's in a pickle.
I love that he's complicated and he's not just some like.
Yeah, he's flawed.
Out there. Yeah. And I think it's like such a life lesson, especially as a kid, when you read through these books and you're like idealizing this man. And then you're like, wait, what? And then by the end, you're like, oh, he's just trying to do the best he can. Anyway, I just think he's a really great character. All right. Thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye, Mitch. Bye, Steph. Bye, Steven.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Talk Like a Mother Parenting Autism podcast. If you are enjoying our podcast, make sure to rate and review us wherever you listen. And if you'd like to support us, you can become a subscriber. Just check out the description of this episode. Give us a follow on Facebook and Instagram for more content, and we'll see you next time.